Hi everyone, this is Yara Stark. So we're diving into our regular mastermind group call. And as always, I'll go to the lines first. So if you do have a question, please press number 11 on your dial pad or your Skype pad, and we'll dive straight into the questions. But if I don't see any, I'm going to jump straight into the forum questions and give you a chance. Okay, I'm not actually seeing any at the moment, so we got a shy group. I'm going to jump into the forum question first just to give you a chance to think up some questions. Remember, you are welcome to ask anything regarding your blog, or regarding your internet business, regarding a membership site perhaps you're working on, anything to do with the whole realm of internet marketing, and I'll do my best to give you an educated response. Okay. And I think we have my new friend, Fred, on the line.
Hey, I've been getting frustrated trying to set up, Fred Bleeker, by the way. I've been trying to set up a couple of different membership sites, and one of the reasons why I signed up for your big program is because I wanted to get some insight on that. I've seen just about every solution out there and paid a lot of money that things never came to fruition on membership site software. What would you say, what do you think of what you're currently using in terms of its ease of use, cost, et cetera? Could you give me some feedback on that?
Oh, certainly. You have the, it sounds like the same experience I've had when I've gone out there looking for a membership site script. It's just either really expensive or you get half the features that you want and the other half don't. And then you try and set it up and you're having trouble trying to figure things out. And because of all that trouble and the cost involved, I just decided to keep it really simple. And I password protected a WordPress blog as the main resource area, and used Aweber or any autoresponder would do this to have out sequential lessons going out. And that works in my case when I've got programs that are based on sequential material. If you do, you know, want to perhaps have something that's, you know, locked away behind a membership site and is released over time, my system won't do that. It relies on the email coming out over time. But that's fine for what I do. Some people prefer to have a slightly more robust system. I think, you know, a member is a really popular one, and that's probably the only system I recommend outside of what I do, simply because it gives you a bit more control over billing. It's got an inbuilt affiliate program, and it does let you have a unique password for every member. But, you know, I thought about all these extra features, and I just loved the simplicity of WordPress. Really easy to add new content for members. You get, you know, an inbuilt RSS feed. I could control it once it's set up, and I don't need to go to my tech person to make minor changes to content because it's the same way I'd edit my blog. And then, obviously, I love Aweber as an email delivery system. So I've, you know, ever since I started this, I've tried to keep it as simple as possible, and that's worked wonders for me. Depends, though, Fred. Do you have any, you know, unique requirements, or is it pretty much the same sort of thing I'm doing?
No, I actually do, and I think you're using something similar, which is one of my concerns is to be able to have multiple tiers of membership. For example, to have at the lowest tier people accessing sort of printed matter, at the second highest tier printed matter and audio, and at the highest tier printed matter, audio, and video. Now, could you create something like that?
You certainly could. It would be a little bit more cumbersome because you'd have to have people manually being added to an upgrade if they did decide to switch from one to the other. You know, prior to actually doing what I do now, I was using Butterfly Marketing. In fact, this program, Blog Mastermind, launched initially on Butterfly Marketing. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's a script by Mike Filsaime. And I liked it because it had a lot of built-in marketing function. It's designed for viral marketing. So you can have the ability for people to forward information, refer people very easily in it. Basically, everyone who joins the program is also an instant affiliate, and that's the key to the viral nature of it. And it also allows you to have what you're talking about, multi-tiered membership. So you could have a free member who gets access to certain resources, a gold member, a platinum member, et cetera, and each person is defined based on whatever membership class. And if ever want to upgrade, they just go to the membership page and click the buy button, and they can upgrade themselves automatically. So I guess that's a slightly more automated way of doing it. But frankly, the issues we had with getting Butterfly Marketing to do other things, for example, handle recurring subscription payments, was more difficult than the advantages I could get by using it. So as I said before, I'd like to simplify. You know, if I was going to do similar to what you were doing, I'd look at a member first, because I'm pretty sure they have that sort of functionality, and it's a very widely used system and well-supported system. If I didn't do that, I would simply go, okay, I have three different levels of membership, three different blogs hosting that content. Each one will have a different password. If ever anyone wants to change, or when they're presented with the options to buy, they just buy whatever level of membership they want. And then the follow-up sequence they get after buying will be whatever is appropriate. So, for example, with Blog Mastermind, like you said, you bought the top level. You chose option three, and you would then send a different sequence to the people who bought the basic $97 a month package. So in a sense, there was a sort of a tiered level there, even though there's a lot of shared resources between those groups. Through the use of an autoresponder, you can dictate what additional content a person gets versus another type of member. Does that make sense to you?
No, that's perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay, no problem. All right, moving down the line.
Hey, Yara, it's Mitch. I just have a couple quick questions. When, you know, throughout the videos and the podcasts and all that other stuff that I've been listening to and reading of yours, you talk about the pillar content of like a book, kind of like your blueprint. And then also, you know, I listened to the video thing the other day and I watched all of Gideon's videos. I'm switching my web template over. I got a tech guy to do all that stuff for me because I'm just totally clueless on it. Is that stuff, the book and, like, the videos, is that all stuff that's covered later on in the course and I should hold out and wait till you go over that? Or do I put that on there and start accumulating the data? And also, on the video end, is there more to it than what Gideon told us that we should hold out and wait for that to be covered in the course?
Right. Regarding video, not really. I don't go into as much depth as we did with Gideon's area. And to be honest, you know, beyond using what we talked about on that call, ScreenFlow to record, and basically obviously a webcam and sticking it up on YouTube, I haven't done much more than that in terms of marketing for my blog. So you've got the tools there. If you're capable of getting yourself used to using Camtasia and ScreenFlow, depending on which operating system you're on, then, you know, you could just dive in. I'd get started straight away with that. And YouTube is a great place to get started. And I'm still learning personally myself with YouTube and getting, you know, different features. Since I'm a Mac user, I have iMovie, so I'm playing with the features there and just seeing how they come up like that. On podcasting, though, there is a lesson dedicated just to podcasting. And I actually go through the system I use to create my podcast, or at least I did use when I was a Windows-based user. It's not very different, though, from Mac. It's just use a different piece of software. And that essentially is Skype and call Hot Recorder or Pamela if you're using Windows, or Call Recorder if you're using Mac. That's just to record an interview when you do a Skype call. And that's how I've done most of my podcasts. I've either called a person Skype to Skype and then hit the record button. That will give me either an MP3 file or a WAV file, depending on what recorder you're using. And then I will use the program Audacity if I was in Windows, or GarageBand if you're in Mac, something like that. And that just allows you to maybe put intro and outro music. You can edit out any bits you don't like in the audio, and then just produce a file, an MP3, and you can upload it to your server. So there's a lesson that covers that. It's not specifically technical because, you know, as always, I give you what you need to know, and if you have any advanced tech things, you really should be getting someone else to do it for you. But I do talk about the strategies with using the podcast in particular to meet the right people, and I think that's pretty important. It's obviously great for content, but it's also a fantastic relationship builder. So there is a lesson on that if you do feel you need to hold out. But, you know, I always think if you're that way inclined, if you're motivated, start experimenting straight away. You know, if there's a few nuggets from the lessons you get from me that help what you're already doing, then that's a great outcome. But, you know, the motivation is the key here. Taking steps and getting a result and, you know, doing an action is always going to get you quicker than studying materials. So I'd say dive straight in.
How about on the book? Should I post that once I get it back from the proofreader? and be accumulating those emails, because, I mean, I could accumulate them, but I sure don't know what to do with them. It's amazing. I have to tell you, you know, and it's like, I don't mean to, like, you know, be one of these guys that's like, hey, I'm your biggest fan or anything, but I think it's pretty amazing that you know, I just do what you tell me to do, and it's like my traffic just doubles, like it seems like every other day, and it's like it's just an amazing thing, and I really appreciate it. It's like something every day something happens that's spectacular. It's like, it's unbelievable.
Should get you to record a testimonial for me, but thank you.
Well, wait till I put some ads or something. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, my blog has been up for about a month and a half. And I think what we've been doing this a month, and I'm doing like, you know, 400, 500 hits a day, unique hits. So that's
fantastic. That's amazing.
So, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not 5,000 or 50,000, but it's a lot more than I expected at this point.
That short time frame, that's fantastic. Well, you know, to answer your question regarding getting a report out there, and I do recommend you call it a report and not an ebook if you're trying to build a list. You know, it's never too early to start building a list. In fact, I think I mentioned that within lesson 6. I'm not sure. It's a pretty early lesson. I do talk about, you know, maybe you're not ready to build a list, but it's not never too early. So I go into it much more depth towards the end of the program for those people who want to take that step, because a lot of people are sort of struggling with choosing a topic and then building some audience for that topic. But if you have a report ready to go and you can get an AWeber list on your blog, you know, just deliver that report and then just write a few emails as a follow-up, short emails, just to keep that communication going. And, you know, email marketing is something that you could do an entire course on. In fact, I probably would like to do that one day. But since you're already a blogger, you know what goes into compelling content that will help build a relationship. So just queue up a couple of emails that, you know, add to whatever your report talks about. I don't know what your strategy is. Obviously, that's important to think about long-term, what you're doing with that list. Is it trying to sell a product or a service or just affiliate products, or, you know, just maybe building a contact point until you decide what it is you're going to sell? Do you have any feedback regarding that?
I don't really know what I want to do, because I never really started blogging to make money. I never really even thought about it, and it was kind of like, I took your course more to build traffic, and then it's kind of like, wow, I really think I can make money off of this. So I do it because I love it. I'm not doing it to make money. I have a great job.
That's the best way to make money, is to do it because you love it. So I do think then, like, this is actually similar to what I did with my list when I first started. I wasn't sure either what it would eventually become. I thought information product of some kind. I wasn't sure what. So, you know, if you love what you're doing, just pour a bit of that into the newsletter as well. So release that report, give people a chance to subscribe to your list, and just pop in a newsletter once a week or whatever you feel comfortable doing, even biweekly, just to keep the communication going until you decide what it is you want that list to be. But I guarantee you, if you've got, you know, 500, 1,000 people at the end of a few months, just because you decide to put it out there, you'll be very happy when you have made a decision what that list will focus on. Bearing in mind, you know, the report is obviously on a topic, so the emails that follow on will be on the same topic, but I think you get that. So.
Okay. And to everyone else listening, when I'm going to be back on the Fox website, they're going to have me back on. So look for a cryptic message if you happen to see that. I'll send you guys all out a shout.
All right, cool. So moving on then. Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Mary Sue. I was just wondering, the quality of this call seems to be really, really good, and I've had very much mixed results using Skype, and I've heard some telemarketing professionals say never, ever use Skype, only use a landline, and sometimes I've just felt like I really agree with that because the quality is so bad. Can you address that in some way? Are your calls always this good? And what else would you do if you found that it wasn't? Sometimes I have echoes, you know, all kinds of stuff.
I can tell you that Mary Sue, is that it?
Mary Sue, uh-huh.
Mary Sue, sorry. I can say that you're calling in on Skype, I can tell, because of my control panel here, and your quality is not quite as good. Like, it's a little bit scratchy, and, for example, the people on this call may not be able to hear you. Mary Sue is asking whether there's issues with calling Skype for a teleconference service. So I can tell you that I would never be the host with Skype unless I absolutely had to, like the phone lines were down or for some reason I couldn't dial in with a normal landline.
Okay.
That is simply because Skype is known to drop out. You do sometimes get patchy connections with delays and so forth. That being said, it can happen with a landline too. You know, for example, the call we did with Gideon, he was clearly a second or so behind, given that he was in Australia and I was in Canada. That's acceptable. You can't help the lag over a phone like that. But if I'm hosting a teleconference, definitely recommend using the landline. I would not call in. I have done it once because I simply couldn't get access to a landline that would work, and that was okay. Thankfully, it was a very small teleconference, and I got away with it. But right now, I'm calling from a landline. And looking at the control panel, you know, there's a good to maybe 40% of people right now are calling in with Skype, and I'm sure the quality for them listening to this is, like you said, Mary Sue, it's good. Perhaps there's a delay, maybe it gets patchy, but that's because Skype is using internet bandwidth to connect. So honestly, with this, it's a bit hit and miss no matter what service you're using. I've never found a perfect one. I said on one of the other calls, I'm using highspeedconferencing.com, which I think actually has just recently changed to High Dev Conferencing or something else. It's a different name. I use them because they have this fantastic control panel that lets me do this question and answer and see who wants to ask a question. And it's not super expensive to do that. There is another service called AccuConference. I think that's A-C-C-U Conference, that I originally was going to use. A lot of top internet marketers use it as well. It has a similar function where you can do Q&A, but it's like 1,000 times more expensive. It's ridiculous. It's about $300 a month, something like that. So it's, you know, not really cost effective for a small business. There's an absolute million different teleconference providers. I have no hesitation recommending though what I'm using now. The Skype feature I think is fantastic, and you won't find that available for everyone, for every service. The fact that you can call in now and not be charged because you're using a Skype, essentially a Skype-to-Skype call to tap into this line, is fantastic. But if you are hosting, to answer your question, Mary Sue, I definitely recommend you should be on a landline.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. Okay, moving on to the next question, just a reminder, if you do want to ask a question, just press the number 1 and then the number 1 again, and I'll see a little hand telling me that you want to ask a question.
Hi, this is Becky.
Hi, Becky.
Hi, Yaro. Thanks for hosting these calls. I really appreciate it. So I'm wondering if my blog is a little bit different from some other the blogs that you've given examples to. It's a business-to-business blog, so the people who are my blog readers are businesses or other consultants, kind of like yours, but really more focused on small, medium, and even some large corporate businesses. And I've been blogging for about a year and a half with a giving mindset. I didn't know that was what it was called until I listened to your recording. And I've never monetized it. But now I'm beginning to think that that's something I want to be doing. And I'm wondering how difficult it is to monetize something like this, because with a business-to-business geared to small, medium businesses or corporate businesses, it feels like I'm never going to get to the, you know, huge thousands and thousands of readers. But I probably will have a very focused group of readers, and I do now. I have about 800 or so on my RSS subscription, which I'm thrilled about. So I'm not sure what type of monetization techniques I should be focused on here in this course. Should it be looking at just how to do sponsorships? Should it be looking at some of the other types of techniques you focus on? What are your thoughts?
I would definitely say an information publishing model would be the likely, like selling information.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming the people who read your blog are there because you're providing some kind of education. Would that be right?
Yeah. I mean, I've focused on customer experiences and how to really do it well for your organization, how to create wow
right.
customer experiences.
Okay, great.
So they see me as an expert in this?
Can I see you as an expert in that? Is that
no, they see me as an expert in this.
They see
you.
Oh, even better.
I hope so. know, maybe someday.
I don't know you that well yet, but maybe. definitely. Oh, that's ideal. You've done the hard work already. 800 RSS subscribers, fantastic. You know, I'd want to get an email list going as well if you could, but that's a perfect base for setting up a traditional information publishing funnel.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think about, you know, why it is those people are there in the first place, which is obviously a customer, to learn how to deliver a customer service experience that, you know, creates evangelists for their companies. That's obviously a way to increase your profits dramatically. So I would recommend focusing on that kind of angle in your
mm-hmm.
whatever information products you publish. And this is almost formulaic in a lot of ways. There's a bit of work creating the content.
That's
you're
no
experiencing
problem.
This right now with Blog Mastermind. You know, you give away content on your blog already to build that audience. You might have an entry-level product designed for that audience. So, you know, I don't know who you're tapping into. Is it middle managers or small business owners? Whoever that is, you know, create the content to target them. You can sell a $27 ebook or maybe a little bit more. But the good thing about the corporate clientele, they're not afraid to spend several thousand dollars because they can see the results on the other side tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
An individual might not be that way inclined, but when you've got a company, you've got systems in place so that when you learn something new, you can almost, not instantly, but you can certainly implement it reasonably quick and then get that result. So I'd go, okay, I'm going to sell an ebook or some sort of digital introductory product. That won't make you rich. That'll just get you started and that'll find the buyers. From there, you can move to some sort of higher-end product. It might be DVDs, video instruction of some kind, maybe just a collection of more content. From there, you can have some sort of continuity program, you know, maybe ongoing, much like we're doing now. You could create a membership site or even just a system that they can implement that they need to go through over a period of weeks or months, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then even above that, you could have a full-on coaching system. And this might cost, you know, $1,000 a month, something like that, where they get access to you. You take a look at their business, tell them where they need to change things. And that's almost like a high-paid consultant kind of role, but you structure it within a coaching membership site methodology so that you're not necessarily having to, you know, do everything for them,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you're a step back from a consultant would be, I'd put it. You're providing some kind of one-on-one or maybe group environment to interact with them, like we're doing now, as well as the much more detailed, high-level, advanced training on that area. But that's a funnel. So what people would do would they'd buy your book, they love your book, they get some rewards from that after implementing it, they want more. They buy whatever next step up you provide, might be a $97 product, something like that. Then you have your $97 a month coaching program or continuity program, which might be better as a course, and then $497, maybe one-time payment of $997 for the higher level product. Then you can go crazy and run conferences and seminars and really become the speaker and take this as far as you like, but you've done the hard work, you know, getting up to that almost 1,000 hardcore fans. Now you just got to present them with products that they want to buy and benefit from. Might take a bit of testing, but
mm-hmm.
you know, you've got the grounds to do the testing right there. And you know, advertising is great, affiliate products are great, but you'll always make the most money long term selling your own products. I like to do all of that because it's obviously nice to have multiple streams of income. But you know, if you want the most stable long term business model, it's selling your own products. So I would look to follow that path first.
Is that something that I need to have an email list in order to kind of take this funnel path?
Yes.
Or can I do it from my RSS?
I would recommend adding email, and
mm-hmm.
I think you'll always get a better return on email. Don't look at your RSS as a bad thing. Just, you know, there's a few rare circumstances where an RSS will respond just as well as email, but in almost all situations I've experienced, you're sending out an email selling a product, you're going to get a much quicker response to that email simply because of the way a person interacts with email. That being said, you know, your RSS is a different purpose. It's giving people aggregate information from your blog, so it's giving everything, you know, whatever you produce on a daily basis or whatever it is you produce, they're getting that. There's no strict purpose behind this. I don't know if you're going to be able to make it. The bonus call, did you qualify for those?
Yes.
Yeah, you did? Okay. When I do the conversion blogging bonus call, which is just me, this is something I will talk about in much more depth. But basically, if you're going to start an email list, then I recommend you start some sort of very focused e-course. So you need to decide what it is, your system, your methodology, what it is you stand for, and what you're going to be selling. So it's a step above your free information at your blog. That email list, either a free report you give away or a sequence of emails delivered in an e-course structure, needs to be very specifically targeted at helping people meet that need, get that information, and then implement it to get a result. And that's, it's a standard formula. They often call that the gauntlet. So your people will go from your blog, they'll join that list, they'll learn a very specific set of information. And not everyone who reads your blog is going to want this. This is why you do it. You're filtering the people who are more likely to become buyers from your core audience. And then they'll go through that course. They'll be presented with an option to buy your introductory product. They'll buy your introductory product, and then you over-deliver there, present them with more options to buy higher-end products and so forth. But for the short-term future, I'd recommend decide what it is. You call it a USP in business terms. I'm sure you know what that is given your area. And from there, carve out whatever main free resource you're going to give away on the email list, and then start building that list, and then start selling from the list.
Okay.
Got me?
Well, that's encouraging.
Okay, yeah. You're in a perfect market for it. The business environment know how to spend money on tools that help their business. You just have to make it worth their while. Show them testimonials, show them proof. Obviously, even until you've had clients, it's hard to do that. But once you start satisfying people, get some case studies going to show how you helped other businesses. You may have that already. I don't know.
I do. Actually, I'm a consultant, yeah.
Fantastic. So grab as many of those as you can. And then, you know, or if you're a consultant already, this is just a less labor-intensive way of making money. So translate all
good.
That. Yeah, all the skills and what you've got, and put it into digital content that people can go through without you needing to be there, and then build a funnel around that.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Yaro. I appreciate it.
No problem, Becky. I'll catch you later.
All right. I'll keep you posted.
All right. Let me look at the control panel. Do we have any more people? No. I'm seeing no more questions, people. There's a lot of people on the line, though, so if you do want to ask, just press 1-1, and just a reminder, no question is too easy or too hard. I think we've covered some slightly advanced topics perhaps in the last few calls, but if you have a more beginnerish question, don't be afraid to ask, and I'll see if I can help. Okay, here's another one.
Hi, Yaro, it's Kritia.
Hey, Kritia, how are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm good.
I was. I have a question, and it's... I guess a continuation of the question that the other person asked just before me. In one of the video or lessons, you talk about the RSS subscription button, making it as big as possible. And I was talking to my webmaster who asked me to double-check with you again because I think that the idea is to build your database more than your RSS opt-ins. And so I just sort of wanted to understand a little bit more about that before getting him to or paying him to do any work on the site.
Right. I would decide. I mean, you can look at my blog and you can see the RSS button does come just before the email list opt-in. Some of the other people will flip that over. They'll have the email opt-in just above the RSS. In most cases, the email opt-in will be more prominent because you just simply need to sell it more. RSS, you're not necessarily selling as hard. People read a blog, they know what RSS is. You might have to train them a little bit. With newsletter opt-in, it's get this incentive, join my list. So you need to have some dot points, maybe a sentence, et cetera. I like to use a picture and a video in my case as well to really encourage that. If you are very focused on what your email list is going to do, and I think you might already be there, Krizzy, I'm not sure, but I would...
No, it's sending weekly updates of the posts that I put on the site.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah.
Let's clarify that with people. This, you got to be careful not to confuse your readers when you have an RSS to email service versus a newsletter, an email newsletter or an e-course. the RSS to email service is delivering your blog posts through email. And some people will want that. But if you have that box competing with the box for your email newsletter, which might give away a free report or take people through a little mini course, they're going to go, which one is for what? And that's
well,
one of the reasons why.
No, on the site, what happens is when you land, there's a light box. So basically, it asks you if you want to sign up for our newsletter, and you get a free free report. So then when you sign up for the newsletter, then every week through Hourbur, I'm able to feed it reads my RSS feed, and it sends all of the posts for the week via a newsletter, and we created a little template so it looks, you know, just like the site and whatnot. So that's what people get on a weekly basis.
And what's the incentive that you give them to join? Like, what do you tell them that they get?
I give them a free report. It's, well, actually, 7 free reports in one bundle.
Right. So they're getting those 7 free reports first, and then they're getting weekly summaries of your blog posts, which is sent out automatically through the blog broadcaster tool within Aweber. Right.
Exactly.
Okay. That's good, I guess, because you've sort of killed 2 birds with 1 stone. I've never actually had my blog updates go out to the same list that my newsletter is on. They are 2 separate lists. That's more a function of the way my blog grew because I had RSS to email before I had an email newsletter. I think what you're doing is fine, especially if the content you're publishing to your blog is that related to those mini reports that they're all targeting
the same
problem. So that's all good. In that case, you know, you only have 1 thing you really need to publicize, which is get people onto that. And when you said a light box, you mean you have like a pop-up kind of thing when they first enter the website?
Yeah, those light boxes, like basically when you get on the site, within a few minutes or seconds, should I say, the background goes black, and then there's this box that says, you know, join our membership now, and da-da-da-da, and you receive this great news report, plus you're up to date on the latest and greatest, and then people put their first name and their email address, or they can close the
box.
How
are you finding that working for you?
Well, I had before the Aweber, the little thing, the box that went across, and before that, I had somebody who had advised me to put on the home page a page saying to people, click here to join our list, and then they were sent to a second page. Well, I did that. I followed that advice for most of last year, and I almost had nobody sign up. And it didn't matter how many tweaks my webmaster and I did. I mean, we changed the colors about 50 times. We changed the size of the box. Nothing would do. And then I can't remember how it happened in December of last year. I said, well, I'm just going to try this Aweber box. And I started putting the pop-up box from Aweber, and that my email list started growing, and I started seeing a difference. And then in May, I think, we put the light box in, and then the light box, that's when I really started seeing my list grow really, like, seriously.
Okay. Well, you know, if that's working, I'd keep it up. There's an element here of personal preference as well. I've considered putting up similar types of pop-ups and light boxes on my blog instead of having it just part of the overall design. I think, you know, because I came from a blogging background and I wasn't too big on list building to begin with, I felt from my own experiences that I hated pop-ups. So I tried to stay away from that and didn't want my audience to be exposed to that. That being said, you know, there's a marketing choice here versus a personal preference. And I think, you know, I know, for example, Terry Dean, he's an internet marketer who's become a very prolific blogger of late. And he has, like you, he has I don't think it's a light box, but it's one of those flat pop-ups that you can't really block, and you know, you can close it, and he's got that, and he actually has an opt-in box that appears above the first article the first 3 times you come to his site. So he's got a plugin doing
too. It's a plugin. Yeah, I have that too.
Right.
I have
so,
both.
You know, great. So, you know, you're maximizing your well, I guess really we've got to come back to the first question then. You need to decide if you're ready maximizing your email opt-ins, which I think you are, you're probably better off just having not a super huge RSS button, but a reasonable-sized RSS button
That's what we have now on the right-hand side. It's sort of the normal size. But then I said to him, well, we need to make it bigger, and then he said, well, can you just double-check to make sure? And then I said, okay, well, I'll ask on the call. So then basically, and then the other thing as well that I asked him to do, and I didn't even realize we had done it, because you had suggested to put an opt-in at the bottom of the post, and actually I didn't realize, I forgot that he had done that. So at the end of every post, there's a, you know, sign up to join our newsletter, and that's what I'm promoting. With the other option that appears the first three times when people come to the site, that I have it as you can opt into our RSS or the newsletter, so that I give them the option.
You know, since you don't have a defined purpose yet for that newsletter, I keep doing what you're doing, simply because you just want to collect people somehow. And like when I talked to Mitch beforehand, when you decide, and this becomes so much easier when you have your first product to sell, you have an idea in your head what your second product will be, et cetera, and you've got this great lead resource that so obviously connects with what it is you eventually sell. It becomes so easy to promote this because all right, we just want to write articles that get people interested in this topic. We want to throw that email opt in box so it's the only thing they see besides the content on the blog itself. And then from there, they're going through the emails and hopefully buying the product as well. So I've been a big fan of simplicity when it comes to that. But you're doing great stuff testing all those other opt-in tools. You know, you're a fan of conversion. I know that, Krizia. So maybe I should get you on a call to talk about your results with that at some point.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the testing was forced. It was just that I was really getting frustrated because the list was not growing at all, and I just couldn't figure it out. And then obviously it came to the point that when you ask people to do too many things, like asking them to go to another page and then signing up and all of that, and that just didn't work. And the other thing as well that I did, and I don't know, I know that that's sort of controversial, is that I know there's a double opt-in, and I was also asking people to double opt-in, and that just did not work. I mean, and then I changed my opt-in to single opt-in.
Right.
That was one of the things I did.
See, I've always used double opt-in.
That's what I've done, and it was just not moving. I mean, and I think that double opt-in, what I found is that if you're in the internet or business, people who go to these sites or blogs, they're used to the double opt-in by now.
Yeah.
But my site is more, you know, it's beauty and it's you know, double opt-in. Like, people don't know. It's like they put their name and they expect something and they don't think that they have to go back to their inbox and do anything else.
Did you have a thank you page after the opt-in that actually gave them instructions? I even have a video showing people. You had all
that?
Wow,
I had a long page, and I explained. I said, "Oh, it's not over yet. One more step. Blah blah blah. The whole nine yard."
Wow.
And it's like nothing happened. And then I thought, okay, well, I was on one of those Auerber calls. They did a training, and they asked.
Right.
They did a survey. How many people have double opt-in? How many people have single opt-in? And when I saw it was half. It was literally half. And I thought, single opt-in? I didn't even know that was an option. So after the call, I called them and I said, "Well, how does that work?" And they said, "Well, that's how you have to set your list from the get-go." And then I thought, oh, so then I didn't do anything, and I waited, you know, 2 or 3 months, and still the list wasn't growing, or people were signing up and not, you know, confirming with their second opt-in. And then I said, okay, let's redo this. So we redid it, and that started increasing the size of the list. And then by the time we moved to the light box with a single opt-in, well, that's when, you know, I mean, now I can see there are days where I have, you know, 10, 12 people signing up, and that for me is a lot at this point, because I wasn't even getting 10, 12 people in a month signing up.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that maybe your traffic, I'm assuming you're testing this along with your traffic growth so you can correlate. You know, we don't want to assume that your conversions increased, but that's because your traffic also doubled or tripled during that period as well. So
no, because in October and November of last year, I was getting some good traffic, but I wasn't getting anybody signing up, or I was getting very few people, and then when they signed up and they were not necessarily doing the double opt-in.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, you know, once you've got that product to sell and you start having affiliates refer traffic to you, you'll just get much higher opt-in rates because of the, you know, the recommendation they're getting to come to your site or however it is they're finding you. So.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Anyway.
I mean, I'm going to have one product soon. I'm working on it now, finishing it, and then I'm going to have another series of product that'll be both for the consumer market, and eventually I was listening to what you were saying to the other student, and it might actually even work for corporate. I didn't even think of it, and so until you started explaining this, I thought, oh, actually, this might work for corporate as well. So, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. No problem, Chrissy. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Next caller. Next caller, I think. It's a problem with a web-based control panel. If it doesn't respond, I can't unlock the line. Hold on. I'll just refresh. For anyone listening who doesn't know how to use the system, just press 1-1 and your hand.
Hi, this is Zahaja.
Hey, there we go. Hi, Zahaja. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. I know you say in the beginning to put out pillar content very regularly, like almost every day, but I've noticed when I put it out every other day, they have more of a time to absorb and I get more comments. Should we put it out every day, or is it okay to space it out like that?
It's certainly okay, and you know, if you're getting that kind of reaction, I often feel the same, especially when you put a more in-depth piece of pillar content out there. It does take a day. You want people to find it, and maybe they're not checking your blog every day yet. So the only condition you might want to think about is possibly you could do a piece of pillar content every second or third day, and then have a smaller news post in between there that's more like a couple of paragraphs linking out to someone else, maybe a great article on another blog. That's a good way to introduce yourself to someone else that way as well. But don't feel bad by not publishing a pillar post every day. There's no hard rules here. As long as you're noticing those trends go up, you're seeing, traffic increasing, maybe some comments starting to come in, and like you say, you're getting that feedback, that's the kind of sign you want to see.
Okay, and I also want to say thank you because I've been having this blog for about 4 months now, and I just signed up for your program about a week ago, and I've had 100 more unique visits this week than I have had in the last 4 months. So just want to say thank you, and that's it.
Okay,
thanks.
That's fantastic, Xenia. All right. Speak to you soon. Okay, moving to the next one. It seems like everyone's getting some good traffic results. That's fantastic. I'm expect that's probably because people are starting to learn, thanks to the Blueprint perhaps, how to put good content out there, which I think really helps increase your traffic and get you from that 10 visitors a day to the 50 to 100 and hopefully much more than that longer term. I'm just trying to get the control panel to open up the next call. Okay, here we go. All right. I'm not sure if everyone who is on the call has been following my Twitter feed or the blog recently, but if you are a New Yorker, if you're in New York City, I'm going to be heading to a meetup that Ed Dale is running as part of his 30-day challenge tomorrow night, Wednesday night. So if you're in New York City, check my blog and you'll find that. Right. Just open up a line for another caller. So.
Hi, Yarrow. It's Lance.
Hi, Lance.
Hi. Following up some previous comment from your caller a little earlier, was this double opt-in. I'm a little bit behind with transferring my blog over on the course and everything, but I see a lot of people on the autoresponders do this double opt-in. An email gets sent, and sorry, I'm not very technical, but I see you do it and many others now. Well, what's the advantage of this sort of system?
The reason why this was sort of introduced was, there's several reasons. First of all, it's possible for a spammer to feed an opt-in form and basically fill your list with junk emails. Why they want to do that, I'm not entirely sure. They might just want to find out what your email address is so they can start sending you junk. Maybe they just want to inflate your numbers, get access to your server, whatever the case is. But if you don't have the double opt-in, then it's quite easy just to stick in an email address and off they go. The same goes for normal people, so not spammers, but let's say they want to get access to your resource and they stick in their name and email address and there's no confirmation. If you deliver that content on the second page, then they can put in a fake name and email address and get access to it. So those are a couple of detriments. Personally, though, in you know, I think a lot of people agree in the internet marketing world, you get a higher quality subscriber if they are double opted in simply because they've taken that step and they must really want the resource to confirm their opt-in. That's not necessarily true for all markets, and there are issues of whether, you know, there's a confusion for some people. For example, what Chrissy was saying before, her market's beauty related, and some of her subscribers may not be that clued in with having to click a link in an email. So there's the issue there of whether you can actually be detrimental to your opt-ins. But give or take, depending on the marketplace, in most cases you will get a higher quality subscriber using a double opt-in process. And it does get people used to clicking links and emails, mm-hmm. which for the purposes of selling affiliate products or your own products is a good thing as well, because it gets people to take action in response to emails they receive. They get used to doing that. But that in a nutshell is the reasoning. And of course, the whole spamming issue, I think, is pretty obvious. The people who run autoresponder services don't want anyone on those lists to be getting email without actually requesting it. So by having this double opt-in process, they're pretty sure the people who get onto those lists actually wanted what they got on there. And case in point, for you, Lance, I could go take your name and email address, stick it into Chrissy's beauty blog opt-in form. Because there's no double opt-in, you're going to start receiving her information without requesting it, and you wonder what's going on there. So,
sure.
You know, that's not a good thing. So, unless you like the
Sorry to interrupt. Is this something I've seen, obviously, where you have to put in a little code, so it's not a double opt-in, you just put in a, you know, those
right.
strange...
That's a cat.
Yeah, that's right. what's the disadvantage of that system?
The thing with that is there are some spammers, some robots that can get past that.
Sure.
Personally, I think it actually can harm humans, especially some of them I've seen where you just can't decipher what the actual characters are. But, you know, it's just another tool for protecting and trying to make sure it's really a human being who really wants what it is you're offering. And I think in my case, I would always prefer a double opt-in for the reason I said before. People, if they receive an email and they take the action that email is requesting, there's a good chance they'll do that again. They get used to that medium. They get used to taking that action. That's what email marketing is all about. You're going to continue to use email. You're going to continue to have links in those emails that you want them to click at some point. You know, even basic things like, you know, I want to get people onto these teleconferences, so I'm sending you an email making sure you click the link to get the information, get in the teleconference. There's something you have to train people in a lot of cases to do. So I like the way double opt-in helps with that. There's pros and cons. There really are no, you know, best solution at the moment. I think double opt-in at the moment is, though. Is there a reason why you're asking? Just a little bit concerned or more curious?
No, more want to get it right first time. Frankly, I mean, I've had problems on my regular real estate site with spurious inquiries and improper emails and so forth. And to be fair, only more recently have the double opt-in methods become quite common. But they've become quite common very quickly, obviously with good reason. So my gut feel was that it's really good, and it seems to be more personal, and the quality. It acts as a filter for the quality, I'm sure, particularly important in sort of the real estate world. So yeah, that's why I'm asking, because I'm a little bit behind and just really want to make sure I am. So AWeber does that does all that very good, presumably.
That's right, it does. And you can switch it on either across the entire, every single email list you run, so across the board, or on a list-by-list basis if you don't want to have all your lists have double opt-in. And, you know, honestly, I think you're going to start seeing more and more of double opt-in appearing simply because spam laws are going to – in fact, I think in the United States it actually is potentially a violation if you don't use double opt-in. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to get a lawyer to check that one out, but I'm sure it'll become a law eventually. Yeah. So you may as well get on top of it now.
Sure. Okay. Thanks very much, Aaron. Great.
No problem,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Fred.
Hey, Yara. This is, for some people listening, this is probably going to seem like an obnoxious comment, but it's not, because it's something that I guess people can aspire to. I've been doing this about 25 years, and I literally have over 4,000 hours of audio programs that I've created because I've done 2,000 interviews with all kinds of people. If I were to take all that content, and some of it is digitized and some of it is not, if I were to try and take that content and optimize it in terms of its use for the blog, a lot of it I'm selling, but there's a lot of things now that I probably would prefer to just give away because it'll just get a lot more people coming to my site. How would you go about doing this? Would you set it up in a way that you had a section that said audios and then listed each one of the topics? How would you do that?
2,000 calls, Fred. That's a lot of content.
And more.
Right, you're a prolific man. Yeah. I guess 25 years, it's a long time to build it up. But it's a tough call. I would have to look at the theme behind each call and, you know, how can things be grouped together to perhaps, you know, be a cohesive message, at least on topic for that blog, of course. You know, at the very least, a podcast section would be something to start with and just drip feed, you know, one interview every 2 days, 3 days. And, you know, if you can have a transcript coming along with it, that's something people love. That, of course, might cost you money, so it depends whether you want to have that created, but you might have that already. I don't know your business, but
any maximum length that you would put on those audios? Because some of these programs are for three-day events that went on, you know, 20 hours long, and I want to chunk those up, but a comment that I got on your forums, I wrote a really long, what I consider to be a pillar article. The comment that I got that I thought was pretty valid was, you may want to break this up into sections. So my question is, for both written content for audio, what kind of maximum length per byte or per section would you use?
Right. In most audiences' cases, the optimum word count is around the 700-word mark. In fact, easyandarticles.com, for article marketing purposes, will quote you something between 300 to 700 words as what they've tested gets the best response rate. Fred, can you just turn me down a little bit? I'm just getting some feedback of my own voice coming through.
You got it. How about now?
I think that sounds good. I'll speak and find out. yeah, so Easy in Articles was where I got a lot of my initial numbers for the optimum length of a blog post. And then, of course, I went and completely ignored them and started publishing 2,000-word posts. But that was more a case of I just felt like I needed to brain dump, and I wasn't almost too lazy to divide it up into sections. And that's just the way I wrote at the time. But that certainly is for optimum response. And with Easy in Articles, the whole purpose behind their site was to get people to read the article in complete and then perhaps forward it to other people or even take it and publish it on their own websites or email newsletters. So for blog purposes, we have similar goals. We want people to read the entire article and hopefully forward it to someone else because they found the information of value. You know, it's easy for a person who scans to get through a 700-word post without much difficulty. So 700 words, a few dot points, some smart headings is usually the optimum amount. And if you were to break, you know, a 2,000 or 3,000-word document into 4 or 5 parts, that would be the most sound blog writing advice I could give you. That being said, I don't personally always follow that. Maybe just because I have been too lazy at the time to do that, but certainly testing will deliver the best result in terms of traffic. You know, it might be smart to have one 700-word article come out over a period of a week, one each day, rather than dumping a 3,000-word article in one day and then letting your blog go. You'll probably get more traction that way. And I should take my own advice, really, and do that whenever I write my big posts as well. But sometimes it's more effort to actually find the point where you want to stop it and start part two. But, you know, if you're having someone going through your content and doing this anyway, then by all means. On another level with this, I was speaking to Rich Sheffrin, who's sort of been my coach in a lot of the business that I've done, and he's really into instructional design now. And I think you said you were into that a bit yourself, Fred. I'm not sure you mentioned that.
Yep. Yep. A lot of background.
And he was very keen, and I think this is the direction he's heading, with modularizing all of his content and being able to deliver it on demand based on an individual user's needs. So they'll tick boxes for whatever type of information they want, and the system will automatically deliver that content. So as a result of that, he's keeping that consciously in his mind whenever he creates new content, either for sale or for free, so that it can be slotted into a modularized system for future use. And you know, for example, for a membership site, it's a fantastic way to deliver some very specific content without necessarily needing to always go back and redo it because everything's chunked into pieces. So you could certainly apply that to your blogging, and if you can keep each article covering one point or keep each podcast related to one point, then I think that's an advantage for growing your business as well. But to answer your other question regarding the length of podcasts,
yeah,
the podcasting experts I've spoken to have almost always said between 15 and 25 minutes seems to be the optimum length of time. Again, it's simply an attention issue. People's attentions have trouble lasting longer than that. For example, this call has gone on for almost an hour, and we probably lost anyone who started right at the beginning at about the 25th minute, but except for a few people. But that's generally the way, the average anyway. We're talking about averages, the human attention span can last.
Got it. Well, sorry for hogging up and creating more problems for the people listening. My other quick follow-up on that would be then, are you saying then that with the audio content that I've created, given it's voluminous, that what you would do is then just put it into sections based on the topics?
I would definitely look at doing it that way. If you can make it, because you know people are coming to listen to this content usually to find an answer to a question. Maybe they're there for entertainment's sake, and if it's entertainment's sake, they just love their topic or they love the person presenting. So they can potentially go through an audio that covers four or five different topics. But most people, I believe, are there because they want to get a specific type of information. If you can make it easy to find, they're going to love you for it.
Perfect.
So I don't know if you've
got that works. Thanks.
This for you, Fred. All right, no problem. Okay. Just looking at the control panel to see whether we have any more calls. Any more questions. And since we are hitting 4 o'clock, if we don't have any more questions, I will wrap up the call. But I will just give my control panel a chance to refresh. We're having a little bit of net congestion, which is giving it a delay. There was one question I did want to answer from the forum, which I might address now because I meant to do it in the last call. And it was a question regarding, this is from InfoRec. I'm not sure if you've made a call, InfoRec. I don't know what your real name is, but InfoRec was your forum name. The question was, do you have any basic methods for getting things done each day or week and keeping things on track? I don't want to complicate things, but my head is swimming with ideas. For example, when starting out, did you have a list of basic non-negotiable things that you wanted to do each week, like post to X number of other blogs, write content, research topics, research monetization, etc.? And also, do you do any basic record keeping that helped with that process? So InfoRec to
Doctor and Professor,
that.
It's Mr. Green here. Good, how are you?
All right. Hold on. What's
on?
Mute Fred. Okay, there he is. So just answer that question. I've got one more question on the line. I'll ask that in a moment. But that question by InfoRec, to respond to you, I did not have any very strict record keeping going with my blog during the early days. I did have a mental sense of tasks I wanted to get done on a week-by-week basis. And I just knew from my prior experience building a website that certain marketing techniques, if you do them often enough, will build results. Now, I knew from the early days, and this actually probably wouldn't work as well as it did back then, but I was very keen on link building, and we're talking the year 2000, 2001. I was actually very active in doing link exchanges for a website I had prior to my blog. And I knew the reaction I got from doing an activity over and over again was not instantaneous, but over time it would happen. So I knew when it translated to growing my blog traffic, if I spent every day or at least several days within a week period doing certain actions, I'd be thanking myself in a month or 2 months for doing that because I'd have a result, an increase in traffic or whatever it is I was going for, and that was usually the case. I wanted more traffic. So I would hold myself accountable purely mentally. Some people can do this just because they're motivated and they can stay on track. Some people need a list and they want to go through it on a day-by-day basis. So I'd have five posts in a forum. In particular, I'd usually reply to the posts most related to my blog. So if I did that for three times a week, I'd be adding 15 posts to a forum a week, and in a month's time, I've got 60 new posts in a year. I've built up maybe 500 plus posts to a forum. That's a considerable profile. That's a considerable number of links coming back to my blog, so that can deliver traffic over time. Same with blog comments. I applied the same philosophy there. So, in fact, the way I work is I actually get agitated if I don't feel like I'm doing something. This even happens to me today. I still don't feel comfortable letting my blog go for more than 5 days is the maximum I will go now without writing a blog post. I feel quite agitated if I haven't caught one up in that period. So that's a form of self-regulation in my case. But InfoRec, I didn't really do much more than that in terms of keeping myself motivated. If I had a problem or something I needed to get done, I knew it would be required for me to move forward, so I'd slot it in and get the research done or get the writing done or get the marketing done, whatever I needed to do, and I just kept myself motivated that way. That really works when you're passionate and motivated. If you're a little bit, perhaps like you're saying, InfoRec, you've got too many ideas, you might need to use something like you said, an Excel spreadsheet, even just a dot point list, a to-do list. The Google Toolbar has a fantastic little to-do list function. If you install the Google Toolbar, actually, no, I'm wrong. It's not the Google Toolbar. It's the Google, internal search tool. If you get that, it includes a little pop-up thing you can have on the right side of your browser. I don't have a Windows machine anymore, but I haven't got it running on Mac, but there's a fantastic to-do list in that that lets you write something you need to do, and you can tick a box once you've done it. I know a lot of people just use that as their to-do list on a day-to-day basis. Okay, I'm going to move back to the live questions. I've got one in my control panel here, and we'll open up the line.
Hi, Yara. It's Kriti again. To answer Lance's question, and I think you're right, I think that depending on the list, some lists or some niches or some markets, the double opt-in, like anything that would be internet or business. I also know that I had checked with Aweber because I didn't want to, make sure that I wasn't penalized or anything of that nature. And they have a system, like, for instance, I notice sometimes when my newsletter goes out, sometimes they're undeliverables. So I've called them because I was concerned. I was like, oh, what does that mean or what happens? And they have a system that I think they try. I can't remember, it's twice or three times. And if there's no response, then that email address is automatically dropped. So they have measures to protect you if, just in case, it gets into the, your opt-in box, it gets into the wrong hands.
Mm, good point, Chrissy. I love Aweber for that. They do so many things that
they are
help build the integrity of your list.
For the price they charge and the level of quality of service when you call. I mean, every time I've called a customer service, I've gotten a lot of really great help. I'm very happy. And again, depending on some of the new products that I want to put out, that might not be suitable for a single opt-in. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Hopefully Lance heard that as well. I'll just give the line one refresh and see if we have any more questions. If not, I will wrap up the call. So last chance to ask a question. If you have anything to ask, just press 1-1 on your phone pad or your Skype pad, and I'll see your little hand stick up, and I'll unmute the line for you so you can ask. If not, we will wrap up this call. And as I said before, I'm heading to New York City tomorrow, or I'm having a week there. It's my second trip to New York, so I will be being tourist again and seeing some new things. So, of course, my priority, though, work-wise, will be to continue to post in the forums and help anyone who posts in the question and answer forum. And I'll also start working on I wanted to get the bonus for the people who made the conversion blogging teleconference, start that towards getting that out to you as well. Otherwise, I'll schedule another call for 2 weeks' time. I think that seems to work well, given the number of participants I've had on this call. And, of course, if you do need help before that, just post in the forums and I'll get to you. In particular, if you want to grab my attention immediately, send me a private message linking to your forum post so I can see it and I'll reply as soon as I can. But I might be slightly slower than usual while I'm in New York. I'm not sure how readily available the Internet is. So I am not seeing any more questions on the control panel, so I will wrap up the call. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. And there's some great discussion we had today. I had some nice advanced topics there, so I enjoyed that. And I look forward to speaking to everyone soon. This is Yara Stark from Blog Mastermind, and I will catch you later. Bye-bye.
The moderator...